This is fun! The FU Network.
Now, let's listen.
Originating from Fun, the FU Network's base north of Toronto, and bringing in voices from coast to coast, this is FU Politics, discussion and debate show, Rock'em Sock'em Politics. Welcome to Rock'em Sock'em Politics. I'm Ed the Sock. We've got a great panel tonight, lots of subjects, and if you're listening and you haven't become a patron on Patreon or given us a boost on PayPal, I'm officially giving you notice that you are a freeloader. Go ahead and freeload. That's what everybody does. Listen to podcasts online. It's free. Everything's free. The whole world's free. But the right-wing media machine, they have like multi millions of dollars, and they're trying to change the way you think and change the way we look at each other and talk to each other and regard each other. They're evil. They, you know, they have the money to build one Death Star, have it destroyed, and then build a second one, while we're still trying to make a lemonade stand. So if you want to see this kind of moderate, sensible, civil discussion about politics with no jargon that you can understand easily, with a sense of humor, want to see it continue, get out of your hammock and stop being a freeloader. Over to patreon.com/FUNetworkTV or PayPal at our email address, FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. And that actually officially probably just ate up all the energy I have in my body, because I had to drive from FU Network headquarters north of the city of Toronto to the city of Toronto and back. And if anybody's ever driven the highways in Toronto, you're faster walking and probably less annoyed. Also, I had a full bladder coming back, and there was no place to pull over to take a leak. So that made it more unpleasant. But hey, let's not let that ruin our fun. Okay, with us this week, we've got Dave Kay. Hello, Dave.
Hello, hello.
Lauren Griffith. Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
How's Barry?
Oh, it's snowing right now, so you know.
What is it actually like snowing, or it did snow?
Oh, it's snowing. It's snowing right now. So.
Oh, really? Just for those who are just joining us, Barry is not the name of her partner. Barry is the city. Is Barry a city or a town?
It's a city.
Okay, the city, that Lauren lives in, north of Toronto. And it's not very far from where I live, but there's no snow here coming down yet. Okay, we've got Mo Amir from the Left Coast out in Vancouver. Hello, Mo.
How you doing, Ed?
Good. Mo, of course, the host of the podcast you should be listening to, as well as the FU Network podcasts called This Is Vancolor. You don't have to be someone from the West Coast to find the topics that they talk about interesting and relatable to you. And today, making his victorious return is the journalist, editor, and self-described leftist dirtbag, Stuart Benson from Ottawa. And we will get to...
Hello.
Yeah, we will get to you dancing around in your cloak.
Oh, yeah.
As we move along. Topics tonight include Elizabeth May leaving the Green Party. Well, not leaving the Green Party, leaving the leadership of the Green Party. Richard Spencer and why he needs his mouth washed out with a bar of soap. We're going to talk. I'm not going to tell you what Stuart's topic is. If you've listened to this podcast enough in the past, you know what he's going to talk about. So I'm going to save
it. It'll be a delicious dessert.
What's that?
It'll be a delicious dessert for the end. So
I may not leave it for the end, because as far as I'm concerned, some desserts should be served midway in meals. Yeah, why do we have to wait till the end for a dessert? All right, and
great point.
But first, we're going to talk about Andrew Scheer, which, good Lord, I hoped when there was a Liberal minority government and Trudeau was prime minister. Again, that we would never have to talk about Andrew Scheer again, except as a cautionary tale. But here he is, The guy just won't go the hell away. He survived the, well, here's the thing. He survived one leadership test, okay? You know, one ring of the gauntlet that he has to walk to stay leader of the conservatives, which he will not get to do. His caucus, the other conservative MPs, they voted not on whether to keep Scheer as leader. What they voted on was whether they should vote to give themselves the power to call for a leadership review, which is like two steps, three steps back from even beginning to consider whether Scheer should still be the leader. So they decided that no, the caucus decided no, they shouldn't be the ones to call for a leadership review. That should be something that's done by the rank and file in April when there's a Conservative Party convention. And you can just bet Scheer is going to be tossed out of there so fast. What do the rest of you think? Dave Kay, thoughts?
I think it's going to be... I think it's going to be interesting to find out who's going to be running against him, because someone's going to raise their head. And I feel like it's going to be a selection of people that you're going to be able to apply a label to. Like, here's your social conservative guy. Here's your fiscal conservative guy. Here's your angry guy. And I think it'll all be guys. And I think it's going to be like, it won't be so much like a surprise as to what kind of votes you're going to see behind these people. I think it's going to be just a plain surprise as to who's going to, you know, take each category.
You know, what's interesting is you say you think it'll be a guy, and it might be. But what I thought was very interesting is one of the people that spoke up against Andrew Scheer in the caucus meeting is one of the defeated MPs, Lisa Raitt. Let me check my notes here. It was Michelle Rampell. Are all of you blocked by her on Twitter?
Not me yet. I haven't been venomous.
Really?
I think I got the block.
You guys are, this is the largest group of people in one place that I've ever spoken to that have not all been blocked by Michelle Rampell. She is a repulsive person who makes repulsive comments, but she said at the party's meeting that the party needs to smarten up when it comes to the LGBTQ community, dealing with gay rights, bisexual rights, the issue of conversion therapy, and they need to start going to gay pride parades. And she says she questioned whether Scheer is the leader who can advance those issues. And it's very clear that Scheer not only doesn't advance those issues, he sends them back to the Stone Age. But I thought it was interesting that a horrible human being like Michelle Rampell was speaking up about how the conservatives need to get hip with the LGBTQ crowd and those who support them. But I think it was purely politics. I don't think it's she. I don't know if she's got any particular love for that community. Maybe she does. Maybe she hasn't mass blocked all gay people. But I thought that was an interesting person to be criticizing Scheer.
Say what you want about Michelle Rampell's like politics or Twitter etiquette, but like she's never struck me as like someone who is stupid or didn't know which way like the wind was blowing. Mm-hmm. So she obviously knows. You'd have to be actively trying to deny the fact, not to notice the fact that Scheer isn't going to the pride parades, and at least showing up is doing damage with a good chunk of the country. And like, even if you don't, even if, because Scheer was asked like at that thing, like, will you, like, do you still think gay people are, it, like, being gay is a sin? And he didn't really answer it. He said, I believe that, like, I'll stand up for people or whatever. Like,
yeah, that was the new new version of we do not comment on vendors we may or may not have hired. Yeah. He just gives these pat statements which don't say anything.
Mm-hmm. But they're just such easy whiffs that it's like even Michelle Rempel gets that, like, just go to the parade. It's not that big of a – how many people will you really alienate if you go to the parade?
Yeah, I think it's more that he's afraid of – I think that if you want to terrify Andrew Scheer, make him watch Ernie and Bert. I think that they're too gay for him. Two guys living together in that close proximity would probably scare him.
Yeah, and we saw how uncomfortable he was just shaking hands with people at the beginning of the election. Like, imagine, like, he would melt at a gay pride parade. Like, it was just, like, he would implode. Like, he would just, like shrink into a single point and disappear at a gay pride parade, just trying not to, like, come into contact with anyone.
That would be awesome to watch. Yeah, I mean, it would be great. What do you think, Lauren?
I think it's a total political calculation. I don't think a person like Michelle can have the capacity to simultaneously be such a bad person and then suddenly just go, oh, wait a second, gay rights. That doesn't jive.
She just looked at the polling numbers and said, hey, I'd like to actually be in government, not opposition. And I think you're right.
I think, too, with that, you know, she's looking out for herself, possibly, by doing
possibly. That. Possibly. Gee, well, Michelle Rempel looking out for herself? Oh, my goodness. The sun is also hot.
As her main focus, really, is what I meant. By saying, you know, I'm criticizing Scheer. I'm on the side of, yes, I am conservative, but dear leader isn't so dear. I think she's trying to cover herself.
All right. Mo?
I think it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall in these meetings and talks between conservative party power brokers and the party itself. I think.
Wait, let me interrupt you first. Let me first interrupt you. A house fly or a Jeff Goldblum fly?
Oh, God, please no.
Maybe a Jeff Goldblum fly.
All right. Okay, please continue.
Worst.
Sure. I just think, you know, with a liberal minority government, the party is probably trying to mobilize very quickly and figure out, you know, what direction they want to go. I'm sure there are people popping their heads up, but I wonder how much urgency there is internally to get that new figurehead, because there's no guarantee that, you know, Trudeau is going to be there for 4 years. Even if it's 2 years, they'd want someone who's in the House who is prominent. And I would speculate that they want to move fast on it. So good for Michelle Rempel to throw down the gauntlet and kind of have her name being out there in the media.
Well, I mean, we've seen some names come forward already. There will be more, some former MPs, some current MPs, some people who probably haven't been in politics before, because Andrew Scheer was a seat warmer, because nobody expected Trudeau to, you know, to hit that much turbulence after his first term. They thought he'd just coast into a second term, and that the people who were really serious about wanting to be prime minister didn't want to blow their war chests if they were going to wind up running against an unbeatable Trudeau. So they said, hey, which one of you schmucks wants to run the party in the meantime? Oh, Bernier wants to, and Scheer wants to. Okay, you two fight it out. And I mean, that's why there's no enthusiasm for Andrew Scheer. Andrew Scheer, you know, the man isn't capable of doing anything with any dignity. He lied all through the SNC-Lavalin thing and the campaign. It was misinformation and disinformation and lying and character assassination, refusal to apologize for horrible statements about gay people. He hired Warren Kinsella to do a black bag attack on Maxime Bernier, which is it's like a shooting a nuke at an ant, because Bernier was never going to be much of a threat. But he's not a creditable human being. I thought at first that maybe he was just a bit dopey, but as it moved along, it became very clear to me that he's not a good human being at all. And if he had, you know, before the election results came in, like a couple days before, when the discussion was that even if he won the most seats, he might not get to form government, he was talking about, it is tradition that the party that gets the most seats gets to form government. And it is traditional that the leader who loses, you know, leader of the opposite party that loses, resigns. And then he doesn't resign. The guy has no, like, dude, do something with dignity and resign. Take responsibility for the fact that you are the reason that the conservatives are not the government right now, because the stats came out from numerous sources that the more people got to know Andrew Scheer, the less they liked Andrew Scheer. And so it was Scheer and his all those reasons that I mentioned earlier. Scheer was so unpopular with people, he lost the conservatives a winnable election, and he won't even take responsibility for that. He's because he's going to go on a national listening tour to hear what Canadians have to say. I think what they're going to say is, hey, fuck off. Because that's, I think, what three quarters of the country said. And certainly, when you think about the looks on the faces of those people he popped out of bushes to shake hands with during the campaign, that's generally going to be the sentiment. For crying out loud, John Baird, former government minister under in the Harper regime, somebody I actually known on and off for years, is going to be conducting an investigate, like a postmortem into why they lost. And all he has to do is just go look at a picture of Andrew Scheer. If he had any dignity, this guy at all, he would have resigned and let the party pick itself up and immediately try to reinvigorate its face, reinvigorate who they are. But no, he has to cling to power. And it's not just him. It's Hamish Marshall and all the conservative dark money from Canada and the U.S. that backs him, that doesn't want him to leave. Yeah, all right, somebody wanted to talk. What's that?
I was just saying, sorry, man, my bad. Go for it.
Well, just one other thing about Michelle Rempel, if we want to talk about leaders in the future, the conservatives are kind of stuck now because they all, I think, engage in the same kind of campaigning about sticking it to Trudeau and engaging in dishonesty and using, you know, like the 50% housing tax and stuff like that. And Michelle Rempel, before all that, was one of the more toxic, you know, misinforming voices in the conservative caucus. So if she's trying to keep the door open for a leadership run, I think she's going to invite a certain type of support out of the Conservative Party that's not going to do any favors for them trying to make any headway with the 70% of voters or so much who didn't vote for Conservatives.
Well, I think her leadership run will be more like a short jog, if that's what she has in mind. But yeah, he just won't do the right thing. And I don't blame the caucus for sitting there in a room looking at this guy with his big puppy dog schmuck eyes and not wanting to be the ones that made the decision to call for the leadership review, because they don't have to. I mean, their faces are right there. Everyone's going to know who voted what. All they have to do is wait for the leadership convention in April, and you know damn well the rank and file are going to carry him out in a wheelbarrow and tell him to get lost. So better to do like the Assassins of Caesar, where they all stabbed him at the same time, so nobody can be said to be the one that actually delivered the killing blow. They're going to let this mass of people in the Conservative Party, the membership, they're going to let them, these faceless mass, be the ones to show them the door, and that's not a bad idea. All right, let's move on. I also wanted to – no, I'm going to do this later. Okay, Elizabeth May resigning as leader of the Green Party. And Mo, take it away.
After 13 years, Elizabeth May announced that she's going to step down from the party's leadership, but she will remain on as a member of parliament, and she's not going to vie for the speakership, as was earlier speculated in the week. And I don't think this should come as a big surprise, especially considering the fact that Elizabeth May offered up her leadership mid-campaign to both Jody Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott, and then openly admitted to doing so to no real benefit of her own.
What?
I just wanted to take it back a few years to the last decade. Her predecessor, Jim Harris, took the Green Party of Canada from about 0.8% of the popular vote to 4.5% of the popular vote. Now, Elizabeth May took the party from 4.5% to 6.5% in 13 years, but she did have three seats in Parliament to show for it. Now, although in prior elections, you know, she was excluded from the leadership debate and maybe wasn't getting proper media coverage, her treatment in the media has been pretty generous. Every election, we always heard this question, is this the breakout year for the Green Party? And that just never really materialized. But more troubling was that the media excused a lot of her gaffes. There was her alarmism about the dangers of Wi-Fi. There was her knee-jerk defense of Gian Gomeshi, which then she blamed the 2014 Parliament shootings on. She presented a 9/11 truther bill to Parliament, and it was just gaffe after gaffe on the campaign trail that culminated in the worst TikTok of all time.
I personally think
you guys saw it. It was terrible.
Oh no!
Poor choice of song. Just poor execution altogether. But I think the biggest issue right now for the Green Party is that no one knows what they stand for except combating climate change. And I think this problem is two-pronged. One, they've always had a really shallow platform. So when they had a good wave of media coverage, I think interested voters were left wanting a little more substance. So they just went somewhere else. And two, the party doesn't whip its votes. And this is really important for a party because I think that filters into how they vet candidates, because they're not asking their candidates about things like abortion. And that was one thing that really hamstrung Elizabeth May throughout this campaign. I don't think she did much to define Green Party values, but I think given her longevity, given, you know, she did triple the seat count from 1 to 3, she increased the popular vote, she had a presence on the national stage, she probably influenced parties to take serious consideration in their climate change platforms. I think it would be unfair to call her career a wash. So my question to all of you, given the totality of her work as the party leader, what is Elizabeth May's legacy?
All right, I'm gonna first, before we get to those answers, you're right that the media ignored the wacko shit that poured out of Elizabeth May's mouth. Crazy shit about Wi-Fi and truthers and not like she was nuts, and they ignored her because she really wasn't ever going to be a power broker, and she was kind of just this amusing, funny, nice little dotty old aunt character. And so they gave her a complete cushion. Like they just did not give her proper vetting like they do leaders that may actually have a breakthrough and form a government. And I think because of that, that's the reason that she tripled the seat count. That's the reason she managed to increase her vote count. Because if people had been able to look at her and say, you think Wi-Fi is going to kill us, and you think 9/11 is an inside job, or whatever the hell shit she was saying, if people looked at her and the press had done their job and properly underlined who she is, I don't think the Green Party would have made those gains. Because I think she would have been out as leader a long time ago. And quite frankly, I'll get to this point afterwards, but let's go to more of Mo's questions. I'll allow you to answer. Dave K, you had something you wanted to add first.
I think the Green Party has certainly made, like Mo made it very clear that the Green Party has made some advances, and polling on Canadian voters has revealed that climate change is very important to a lot of Canadians, especially young Canadians. And so the Green Party right now stands to gain in that vein. But the Green Party for a long time has been appealing to fringe voters. And I think what it needs to do is find its way to making itself mainstream. It needs to stop pretending that climate change is a fringe issue or that they need to be focusing on fringe voters, because that's not the game anymore. If you're going to be the Green Party on a go-forward basis, I think Mo hit it right on the head. You can't have stuff like positions for party members on things like abortion or things like sovereignty coming up and causing controversy, because, you know, that's not going to help you look better. If you look like a single-issue party, you're not going to appeal to people who want to know what your position is on things like foreign policy or on trade or on healthcare or on things like that. If you can't break out of that space where you are defined by one issue and one issue alone, then you're only going to get the fringe vote, which means you're only going to get the percentage that she got this time, if not worse. And so I think the party needs to give itself a spine and start acting like, you know, they have a particular platform.
Yeah, because people don't realize that outside of environment, their economic policy, the Green Party, is closer to the Conservative Party's economic policies than they are to the NDP's. And yet you'll get some disaffected NDP voters or voters who are on the same plane as NDP voters voting for the Green Party, thinking that because they're environmentalists, that they're all tree huggy and all lefty, when in fact their economic policies are not, it's a complete Jekyll and Hyde as far as they've got conservative economic policies and yet what's been identified with lefties, green policy. Lauren, your thoughts? Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, no, I think that's a fantastic point that you just brought up. And it was really strange this week when she was effectively resigning as leader that, you know, the media was ready to give her praise and, you know, be graceful. And then she went back to claiming that the NDP attacked her when even to her own account, all she's saying is that the NDP kept saying that we would work with the Conservatives, which is exactly what she said. So, I mean, even that, like, such poor communication, such poor strategy throughout this election, and I would say even before, and as you mentioned earlier, she just got that free pass.
Well, the Green Party always struck me as a bake sale, a group of people who gathered for a bake sale and then formed a party. Lauren, your thoughts?
So to the question that Mo was asking of what her legacy is going to be like, really the only thing that keeps popping into my head is just TikTok. Unfortunately, in this day and age to me, people don't spend a lot of time on legacy, right? They don't really give a nuanced summation of what it is. It's going to come down to her most recent events, like the most recent news about her. And I think that, like we've talked about before, that there is a certain stick, right? And those moments of bad press and of those moments where we're all just asking what she's doing or thinking, those are going to stick a little bit more than perhaps her advocacy for the green movement, because right now we're in a place where that's happening. There's more people that are aware that there is a huge climate crisis and we need to do something. So to me, that's just what it seems like. I watched her press briefing on her stepping down, and it was just a garbled mess. Like, it kind of seemed like someone took her speech maybe and cut portions of it up and shook it in a jar, and she just fished bits out of it.
It was like a bingo or a raffle thing, speech, it magnetic was, yeah, poetry.
You know, she would go off and start speaking like, you know, I'm going to step down and da da da. And oh, and you guys know my daughter, right? Like, maybe whoa, man. I don't know. Just give a brief, like, hey, this has been a great run. You know, I'm out. And I also found it really weird that she kept going, you know, I wanted to leave when, you know, we were on the up and up. I wanted to leave when we were doing good. I understand that, and I get the idea of wanting to keep it in everybody's mind, have that stick of the Green Party is doing well right now, but I'm not sure if that's necessarily under her leadership than just the basic idea of what they're about.
All right. Stuart Benson.
Yeah.
What will Elizabeth May's legacy be?
I think that there's a reason, Lauren, that when you're thinking about Elizabeth May's like legacy, you were thinking TikTok, because that will be her legacy. She's going to just become a meme. That's what she, like, she's like that. She'll become like the Noid, where you'll just bring it up and everyone will go, "Oh yeah, I remember that." Yeah. Like,
okay. Wait a second. Got to stop for a second. Got to stop everyone for a second. For those who are listening and don't know what the TikTok is, explain it.
Well, what, Lauren, what was the song that she had playing?
Oh my God, I can't remember what it was.
It was incredibly just suggestive. It was, I think there was several mentions about like genitalia and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't, it, because that's the thing. Actual, it doesn't matter.
The lyric.
It doesn't matter what TikTok is. It doesn't matter. It's just, we all remember, oh yeah, she made an embarrassing TikTok. And that's all we need to remember. And that's what her legacy, that's my point, is it's just, she's going to be sort of this thing that will be brought up as sort of like, kind of nostalgia. Not that she'll be a joke, because she has been a good like agitator for the cause of like green energy and global warming and stuff, but like you can't, like that works as a single issue voter or a like an activist, but you can't be a single issue party. You have, like, you can put everything through that lens, but you have to like diversify yourself a bit, and they never really did, and that's why they still only have 3 votes. Though I will say, like, for all Scheer's complaints about the popular vote, Elizabeth May has better argument, because she could probably take some of Quebec, like Quebec seats.
Yeah, like, you know what the problem with that argument is? There's no argument place. Because we don't have a government that gets elected on popular vote.
Exactly.
So who gives a shit? And anybody else want to make a comment before I give my summation on Elizabeth May?
I just want to make it clear that I have not seen the TikTok and I don't care to.
Okay. All right. I think that Elizabeth May was given an easy ride. I think that the vote increase and whatever votes she got this election, she was the beneficiary of the most judgmental generation of voters that were casting ballots, which are, of course, the young millennials or Gen Y or whatever the hell they are, the ones who are always telling you online to say don't judge. They're the most judgmental sons of bitches out there. And she was the beneficiary of them refusing to forgive what Justin Trudeau did 20 years ago. So that they went to either the NDP or they went to the Green Party to show how wonderfully woke they are. I don't see a reason for the Green Party to exist anymore. All right. They had a point to exist at one point when people weren't nearly as aware of the dangers of climate change, back when it was still called global warming. I mean, the Green Party had a purpose. It put environmentalism and environmental concerns on the political map, but they're on the map now. All right, you've got the Liberals talk about it. The NDP talk about it. I think we're going to wind up with a more sensible conservative leader, and they're going to talk about it. Environment is no longer something that belongs only to the Green Party. So, okay, good for you. You brought it up. You made us aware of it. Go away now, because we've got enough parties and no one even knows what the hell you're about other than green, other than the environment. Specifics on the environment, most people don't know. Your financial policy, most people aren't aware of. Your foreign policy, I don't know what it is. What are you going to do? Go take people seeds and shit like that and grow trees? I mean, nobody knows anything about them other than they're the Green Party that cares about the environment. Well, now they're not the only part. They were so successful in putting environmentalism on the political map in Canada that they no longer really have a purpose. So who gives a shit who the leader is? I think they should just fold up their tent. Thoughts?
I'll go for that. Because that's kind of what I was saying a little bit, where it is, the discussion of the climate crisis is really apparent. So to have a party that is specifically for the environment, but not specifically able to create legislation for the country as a whole, otherwise is problematic. I think that, you know, if you can't do that, if you can't put together a platform that has policies that can be green while also actually catering to the country, then yeah, I'm not sure that there's much space for you
anymore. Anybody disagree with me?
Oh yeah,
I will disagree with that.
Okay, go ahead and disagree.
I think like I don't think they have any chance like of actually governing, but I don't think that's a role they need to serve. I think they're a good in the spot they serve of agitating for this specific cause. I think it's an important enough cause.
Wait.
It makes the other parties have to defend that plan.
No, bullshit. Those parties are all talking about it now. Environmentalism is, if not number one, then number two concern across the country about Canadians. What?
I would give them credit for the elevation of that topic.
And I did.
Yeah,
and I think they did that and then contributed to their own uselessness as existing. They did something good. They did a good thing. Now go away.
But I think they continue to do that and hold the other parties.
How do they do that any differently or better?
They don't have any real power. They're Jiminy Cricket. They don't have any actual power. They just get to nag you until you do what you
do. Do you know what happened to Jiminy Cricket in the original version of Pinocchio? He didn't sing songs, okay? The original version of Pinocchio, the original story version of Pinocchio, Jiminy Cricket, Pinocchio squashes him right away.
Well, I've only seen the Disney movies. I know what happens to Cinderella. I don't care about that one. It's like they're happy stories. Like
the Disney versions sure are, but they just, you've said nothing that has convinced me that I have to reconsider my position. They did a good thing. They put environmentalism on the map. It's on the map. No party can ignore it. One of the reasons that the conservatives, if you look at stats and polls and exit polls and so on, one of the reasons conservatives lost support is they didn't have a really strong environmental plan, and Canadians care about the environment, other than the people in Alberta and parts of Saskatchewan, apparently. Who they had other things that were foremost in their mind. The conservatives not having a platform that really addresses climate change hurt them. There is no party. There's no major party. You're not a credible party in this country anymore unless you make climate change a centerpiece of your platform. So who the hell needs this one-issue party that nobody knows what the hell else their policies are? They did their job. Now go the hell away. It's like that brother-in-law in the sitcom who lost his job and comes to stay with you for a couple of days and winds up being there for four seasons. Okay, it's like that. Goodbye. Enough. All right.
Real quick, with Stuart's note about being like the agitation party, if they were to go, there would be someone to take that place. Hypothetically, there may not be, like, you know, you may end up with a weak party that, you know, takes that place but doesn't agitate like you're suggesting. But I don't think that saying that that's having them be an agitator isn't necessarily enough to keep them there, because again, depending on what the topic is, there are parties that will do that will make that agitation and
they may not be political parties, because quite frankly they have three seats in parliament. Big deal. They're a pimple on the ass of government. Whereas NGOs, non-governmental organizations, committed to environmental concerns, they can do more to agitate and bring to the public sphere important issues about the environment by running commercials and things like that and pressuring the government. They can have more effect than a party with three frickin' seats. NGOs do have, in many, especially provincial elections, NGOs do have a tremendous amount of power in informing the public and swaying votes. Interesting as to who people are mentioning as who will succeed her. Some people are mentioning that Jody Wilson-Raybould, who's currently an independent, in other words, irrelevant, may run for the leadership of the Green Party. And I think she thinks, like everything else in her life, that she should just she's entitled to it, and she should just be able to walk into it. But there's really, quite frankly, not enough backs to stab in the Green Party for her to keep busy. And I think that she would find that, while she thinks that maybe she's entitled to run the Green Party and to be the leader of a party, there are other people who have been in the Green Party or the Green Movement who are agitating now or setting up behind the scenes to take a run at the leadership. So it'd be nice to see Jody Wilson-Raybould run for it and lose. But possibly what would be nicer is her not doing that and continuing to sit as a nobody with no question period time and no power until she just disappears next election. Once her riding has, it feels like, okay, we felt sorry for you and elected you. Now we don't have to feel sorry for you anymore. We're going to move on to the next topic. Wow. Richard Spencer, I don't know what term they're using for them now in the United States. White nationalist, white supremacist, neo-Nazi, fucking bigot. He's one of those guys like David Duke, who in the 80s, as the grand wizard of the KKK for the U.S., would do interviews with the stupid hood on and everything, and then realized we're not getting anywhere like this, and he put on a suit. And he put on a tie, and he tried to make it seem like these hateful bumpkins were actually reasonable people who just had a point of view. And Richard Spencer is an example of that. Guy always wore a nice suit, and in public, where the public cameras were, would try to sound reasonable with his bigotry. And then a recording came out. Tell us about it, Lauren.
Okay, so Milo, and I'm not going to be able to pronounce.
Don't say his last name. Don't say his last name. I'm afraid if we say his name too many times, he'll show up like Beetlejuice. He's a guy who should have disappeared too. He's a horrendous little bug of a human. But anyway, so we'll just call him Milo, okay?
That guy.
Yeah.
He released this audio, apparently, and
along with Gavin McInnes.
Yes, and in this game of throw each other under the bus, it has been shown that, you know, Kel Surprise, Richard Spencer, is going off in the most vile and bigoted, racist, like, I'm however you want to call it, but he was losing his mind. This was very specific. He was upset about the impression that was given after the Charlottesville march, and after Heather Heyer had been murdered by that psycho in a car. I guess, you know, public perception had kind of swayed a little bit about what Richard was all about, and he just lost it.
We are coming back here like a fucking 100 times. I am so mad. I am so fucking mad at these people. They don't do this to fucking me. We're gonna fucking ritualistically humiliate them.
Yes, that's right.
Like, I am coming back here every fucking weekend if I have to. Like, this is never over. I win, they fucking lose. That's how the world fucking works. Little fucking kikes. They get ruled by people like me. Little fucking octoroons. I fucking, my ancestors fucking enslaved those pieces of fucking shit.
We're gonna win.
I rule the fucking world. Those pieces of shit get ruled by people like me. They look up and see a face like mine looking down at them. That's how the fucking world works. We are gonna destroy this fucking town.
It's not a surprise though. Like, to me, how can you not tell that's what he's all about? He had coined the term alt-right and used that instead of the terms of white supremacist and neo-Nazi.
Well, yeah, he tried to make white supremacy, acceptable and mainstream. And for a while, He was pretty successful, and he managed to get stupid major American news stations to put him on camera because he was trying to be, you know, look, he's a reasonable guy. If you can find the audio, I believe, online. But here's a little excerpt that I will read. And please keep in mind that I am reading what it is Richard Spencer said in this recording. These words do not in any way reflect my opinions. And if the words are offensive to you, blame Richard Spencer, because we should know what they are. So here's a little a little tidbit, okay? He said, little fucking kikes, they get ruled by people like me. Little fucking octoroons, my ancestors fucking enslaved those little pieces of fucking shit. Those pieces of shit get ruled by people like me. They look up and see a face like mine looking down at them. Okay.
His voice is cracking the entire time he's screaming this crap. It's
that's the crazy crack.
Yeah, like he's like, Lauren, you put this into perspective. This is the day after one of his little troglodytes drove a car into a crowd of people, murdering Heather Heyer. And I can say that, I don't have to say allegedly, because he's been convicted of murder. And like, he's saying, like, we'll come back here 100 times and ritualistically humiliate them. They do not do this to people like me. And like, Jake Tapper had this scumbag on his show like maybe less than 4 months ago, and like talking about like Ilhan Omar, like he styled himself as the dapper white national. It's insane to me. Like, it just proves how much people need to hear someone screaming racial slurs before they'll go, oh, I guess he is a bigot. Like, yeah. We've, like, people have been screaming this from the rooftops for years now.
Yeah, you know.
Do you remember the time when Richard Spencer got punched in the face, and then the media narrative was like, listen, just because we disagree with people, we shouldn't punch them in the face. And I'm a spoiled brat. I'm a pacifist to the very end. But the truth of the matter is, people like Richard Spencer deserve to be punched in the fucking face. And
I completely disagree. He deserves to be kicked in the balls. Okay, punching him in the face.
You click the punch and then you go for the kick.
Just a good swift, wearing some good Kodiak boots, some good Canadian Kodiak boots. He deserves a kick in the balls, because you know what? Getting punched in the face on camera, that's almost macho. It almost makes him a martyr. But you kick this guy in the balls and see him on the ground holding between his legs and whining and crying, that is what is going to take away the notion of him as this big strong guy. Punching him in the face, that just burnishes him as a martyr. Kick him in the balls and see him down there holding his jewels, that's the way to go about it. Not that I'm advocating somebody go and kick him in the balls. Yeah. Don't use me as, and don't go kick him in the balls and say Ed the Sock said to kick Richard Spencer in the balls. But if you had been already considering it, well,
that's the best way to do it. That's an objective thing. And the best thing about him getting punched in the face is that he was in the middle of explaining the significance of his Pepe the Frog lapel pin. When he got punched in the face, it was just like, I think there's a comedian, I forget his name, but he was like, he like became a meme in the process of explaining a meme on camera.
Yes. Real quick though, with the whole Jake Tapper thing, it took me a whole 2 minutes to find out that, you know, Richard Spencer had been banned in 26 different European countries. Because of one of the acts that they have in Poland. So he had tried to have a white nationalist convention in Hungary, and the prime minister was like, nah, brah. So he ended up banning him and condemning him.
Likewise, that was probably the guy before Orban, the current guy in charge in Hungary. Who just recently made poverty and homelessness illegal.
That's cool.
Yeah, because, hey, well, you know what? How can you argue with the guy? Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so they, like, Richard has been banned in 26 countries because of his vile, horrific rhetoric. How do you not know that, Jake Tapper?
Well, Jake Tapper knows that. And but what Jake Tapper also knows is he'll get a lot of viewers tuning in to watch him take on Richard Spencer, and he'll get some kind of heroic status if he shows Richard Spencer for what he is. And so he's willing to...
He's an expert on white nationalism because he's a white nationalist. That's why Jake Tapper used him. Yeah, it's literally the justification.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's strictly eyeballs and clicks that they were looking for there. And having these people on gives them a level of respectability. Same way the Globe and Mail allowing Ezra Levant, who is, I don't know if he's ever said anything on The Rebel that isn't horribly racist, because I don't pay for The Rebel and won't. But I'd be surprised if anything he said was not racist. And the Globe and Mail, which is a respected legacy newspaper in this country, allows him to have an editorial. Giving these people platforms in respected places, I prefer kicking them in the balls. And for those who didn't understand the comments that, the references that Richard Spencer was making in his rant, for those who don't know, kikes is a term for Jews. And he says that Jews get ruled by people like Richard Spencer. I think I'd need to see empirical proof of that. Then he starts referring to octoroons. Now, octoroons are not those little pastries. Those are macaroons, okay? An octoroon is a term from the antebellum South. It was somebody who was 1/8 black. Who calls anybody an octoroon anymore? How is that even in your vocabulary? I remember Saturday Night Live doing a sketch, and it was actually a funny sketch, which is rare for them in the last 35 years, where a guy took his date to a restaurant, and he was convinced he was getting bad service because he was an octoroon, even though it was played by a white guy. That's how stupid the term is, octoroon. This is a guy who's so obsessed with race that he's trying to resuscitate a term that talks about people who are 1/8 black. I mean, what the fuck's the matter with these people?
One of your great grandparents was black. Like, that's 1/8, isn't it? Like, that's how insignificant that, like,
All right. Well, I think we're all in agreement on Richard Spencer. Thank you, Lauren.
I think what he's trying to do in that space is he's trying to show off his vocabulary to knuckle draggers in the room with him, who are all celebrating what happened at that time. Because, Lauren, you said that they were like, he was mad. It sounded to me like he was celebrating. Like, he was like, this is a victory lap for him. Like, we're going to come back. We're going to do this again. And it just, like, I don't know. It felt like he put the hood on in that moment, and someone caught him on tape. Yeah.
That was the same around the same time that his supporters were marching with tiki torches and saying the Jews will not replace us, and never explaining replace you at what? I've never heard Jewish people say, you know what we need to do? We need to replace the old idiotic bigots with new idiotic bigots. It didn't even make any sense.
They're talking about this. That's their bullshit great replacement nonsense that they're constantly on about. It's like, it's just no one wants to have sex with you. There's
Bingo.
No conspiracy. There's just no, like, you're not having sex because no one wants to fuck you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and also the people that are replacing you are machines, because corporations are increasingly automating, and your jobs are not the Jews replacing you. It's Skynet. Anyway, let's move on. I just want to drop this in here before we move on to the next subject. You remember during the last U.S. election how Donald Trump managed to throw shade on the Clinton Foundation, which the Clinton Foundation has a tremendous reputation around the world and amongst other charities for actually taking charity money and doing things with it, improving the lives of people in poor countries. And he managed to try to make it seem like the Clinton Foundation was some kind of criminal payoff organization, whatever. Well, the Trump Foundation has agreed to settle a case brought by New York authorities against them. They're going to pay $2 million for persistent violations of foundation and charitable law, including the unlawful coordination between the charity and Trump's campaign. The Trump Foundation was, in fact, always what Trump was claiming that the Clinton Foundation was. And I think that it's very interesting that we're not getting a whole lot of media covering the fact that they'll cover the fact in little stories that the Trump Foundation is closed. I mean, it was shut down months ago because of this. They'll talk about that, and they'll mention that it was in collusion that they took Trump Foundation charity money and put it into the election campaign, but they won't do articles about the fact that the Clinton Foundation was slandered by this, and they do very good work. And I mention that because we're now going to move into a story where the Clintons were intimated insanely when they finished running that child porn ring out of the pizza place, that the basement of the pizza place that has no basement. Apparently they were involved in the Jeffrey Epstein termination. Stuart, weeks ago, you drove me crazy to talk about Jeffrey Epstein, that it was homicide and that he didn't kill himself, even though there was evidence that could have gone either way. Both sides had strong evidence. Now, what's changed?
Well, when we last spoke about Jeffrey Epstein, my Epstein bane was slowly but surely deflating. But then around October 30th, I heard some news that the pathologist hired by Jeffrey Epstein's brother, his name is Robert Bondar. He was a chief medical examiner in New York, 1978 to 1979. He testified at the OJ trial and participated in the JFK and Martin Luther King autopsies. He released his findings saying that the Mr. Epstein experienced a number of injuries, among them a broken bone in his neck, that are extremely unusual in suicidal hangings and can occur much more commonly in homicidal strangulation.
But we heard this weeks ago. The hiatal bone, it's very difficult to break in suicides, but not impossible.
Well, it's not possible, but I just want to set the scene here. Jeffrey Epstein is in a cell at the MCC. All he has in his room are these paper thin sheets that they give to prisoners that are commonly reported as ripping when prisoners are just sleeping in them. They're that thin. They're specifically designed so you can't hang yourself by them. The bunk bed he had in his room, specifically designed to be short enough that you can't hang yourself from. They allege that he tied that paper thin sheet around his neck and then to the bed, and then bent forward on his knees with enough force not only to hang himself and suffocate himself, but to break multiple bones in his neck.
He was a fan of MacGyver.
Yeah, or that guy from Kung Fu the Legend, if you get that joke. So there is that. You can Google it. But I will not. So this next thing that put my Epstein brain to Super Saiyan 3 was November 5th, the ABC video of Amy Rohrbach, a reporter for ABC. A group called Project Veritas, headed by a kind of sleazy figure called James O'Keefe. He released this hidden camera footage that I guess had been leaked to him by someone who was working at ABC, then moved to CBS, and has since been fired from CBS for leaking this video of Amy Rohrbach talking about the fact she had interviews with Virginia Roberts Jeffrey about her involvement with implicating Prince Andrews, Bill Clinton, and then just like there were photos. And originally ABC says, this isn't a real story. Who's heard of this person? And then the palace, the British like royal family got wind that she had this story and started threatening the ABC to shut it down. And ABC complied because they didn't want to lose out on access to Princess Charlotte, who had just been born, and basically any other story with the royal family had been involved in.
Could have been bullshit. And if there's not enough, enough verification, you don't go forward.
Well, here's the thing, is the reason why this video is being released is that it's a recent video where she's talking about the Miami Herald reporting, the Gawker reporting, and most of the recent reporting about Jeffrey Epstein and his relations with Bill Clinton, who he flew on the plane with Bill Clinton, Frank Underwood, I always forget his actual name. What's his name from House of Cards?
Kevin Spacey?
Kevin Spacey, whose own accuser just wound up dead mysteriously. And then for some reason, Chris Tucker was on the plane too, flying to Africa over like 30 dozen different flights individual. And then a bunch of just random women who are just either named as woman or just single name, like first names under the flight logs. Also, Alan Dershowitz been on the plane a bunch of times. Like the plane was lovingly or unlovingly deemed the Lolita Express. And if you know anything about literature, there's only one sort of illusion you're making with that. He has his own island with a freaking temple. He built a temple on the island. Like you can already tell like I'm bubbling over this stuff. I'm so excited.
He's like crazy. He's an egomaniac. He's crazy. He took plane flights with famous people with the glitterati. So can you get on to what's new?
Well, the fact that most of the reporting and the connections with the Clintons, as you said, these are not just like this piece of gate is bullshit. Like the piece of shit is dumb, but this is actual reporting that actual journalists with integrity have done the actual shoe leather reporting on this. Like Amy Rohrbach in that video says that the lawyer for Virginia Roberts Jeffrey, one of the main accusers for Epstein, who's gone on record multiple times, one of the reasons Epstein went away for the little time he did, saying the lawyer said, there'll come a time when we find out that Jeffrey Epstein was the most prolific pedophile the United States has ever seen. And he wasn't just that, but he was also, it is alleged that he was a procurer and provider of young girls to the most powerful people in America. So like, that's why this is important. Like there are women who have come forward saying they're victims of Jeffrey Epstein. And after he died and it was ruled a suicide, basically the search for justice for those women kind of ground to a halt. There's actual victims behind trying to find out what the truth is behind all of this. Like, it's not just my conspiracy stuff going on.
I thought there was something new. This is all old news.
There is. Well, because what do you mean this is all old news? This is
I've heard all this before.
This is confirmation that. Yeah. Well, what do you mean all of this before? This happened like November 5th. This is like 2 days ago.
These are all the same stories that have been floating around for a while now.
Yeah, but before this is conspiracy. This is like confirmation that this is like, this is not a thing that people are just talking about on the internet. Like far right people are doing to try and smear the Clintons because they don't want them to win the White House. Like I'm trying to sound like this is an important story that shouldn't go away. And it feels like people are just forgetting about it.
All right, wait. Let's separate out the fact that Jeffrey Epstein took famous people on his plane to his island. Cause it's entirely possible that those people who were on the plane.
His house.
Oh, what? What'd you say? Who just talked?
I just said to his house. Oh, someone said something else too. But I
don't
think it
so
was on purpose.
Let's separate the fact that a multi-billionaire had rich and powerful friends. Wow, what a surprise. But you can't really.
You don't even know that he was a multi-billionaire.
Okay, he presented himself as one. Okay, he presented himself as one, and he had the trappings of one, okay? And these people do tend to travel together in the rarefied air, and I guess they were flying in his plane through the rarefied air. I don't like it when people mention the number of famous names that might have shared a plane flight or gone to the island as if, well, now we should suspect that they themselves were also taking advantage of underage girls. That's a load of shit. I don't like crime by association. And I thought there was some kind of new evidence that he kill himself.
But the new evidence is the fact that like we have people like contradicting the official story and the official story by the autopsy, where people are saying, well, see, the autopsy says he killed himself. Well, no, the autopsy doesn't actually say that because we have conflicting official rulings on this.
Well, it says that he could have killed himself. It's just less likely for someone to be able to generate that level of strength to strangle themselves in that way.
Yeah, but we also have the fact that the cameras are disabled. We have the fact that most, like, the guards were like asleep on the job. They were not on their duty. We have
because they were shitty guards. Maxwell.
Okay, so you want some new stuff? Ghislaine Maxwell is probably in Brazil with Jean-Luc Brossard. They've tracked her cell phone to a it was turned on and used at a resort in Brazil. And they're just waiting on it. She's disappeared. When that, like, doctor...
You're speaking, of course, of the person, reported, of the woman who allegedly really was the person who was procuring the young women for Jeffrey Epstein.
She was in the photo with Virginia Roberts, Jeffrey, and Prince Andrew at Epstein's home.
Jesus, Jesus, who the hell cares that Prince Andrew was in the photo? You know how many people...
because she's alleging
people take people take photos with.
He's alleging he statutory raped her. That's why it's material, because he's alleging that she raped him. He raped her. That's why it's, because it's evidence putting him in Epstein's home with her when she was underage.
Do you agree with me that there's a big leap between appearing in a photograph with somebody and that being evidence that you were statutory?
Well, when she alleges,
but I think if you're a young girl,
if she was, she says that at that age she was in Epstein's home and had underage sex with Prince Andrew. There is a photo of her when she was that age in Epstein's home with Prince Andrew. That's putting her at it.
You are, you know, I sure hope you never become a judge, because that is the flimsiest attempt at evidence I've ever seen. And you know what?
But it's enough for a warrant.
No, actually, it really isn't.
If you have an allegation of a crime that is saying that this person was here and did this thing to me, and then you have photographic evidence that person was there with that person, that's enough to say, well, we should be able to search that place.
No, actually, by law,
it
really...
It puts it at the scene of the crime.
First of all, you don't know there was even a crime committed. We're not sure. And
because
you know
she's
what?
She's alleging it happened. Okay.
Oh, well, you know what? The thing is, nobody ever lies about some famous person doing something to them. Ever.
Should I find the list of the women?
The photo does not prove when he was there. It only shows that there was a photo taken. But I think the reason why we're talking about
with her, and there are
I don't know, because I don't pay attention, because I don't think it's worth much. But I think the reason why we're talking about this is because of the ABC clip.
Yeah,
I think the ABC clip exists not because they're trying to like show that ABC's got the inside scoop. I think it's because James O'Keefe is out to get the mainstream media at all times. He is there to work for conservative media, or especially for people like Fox, to make sure the people at ABC or CBS or NBC or any other, you know, quasi-objective news organization is going to get yolk on its face. I do not trust for a moment that James O'Keefe knows shit about what he's talking about.
Yeah, but he got a legitimate hit this time.
But
what he got was ABC, or what he got was the network quashing a story that we don't really know the whole detail behind. Maybe it was nothing but conjecture. Maybe at the time it was nothing substantive that was going to put the network at a whole lot of risk. James O'Keefe didn't do this because he's out to make sure that Jeffrey Epstein's grave gets pissed on. He's doing this because he wants the networks to get pissed off. That's what it's for.
So what?
What do you mean? There's an issue
it's
here.
It's a legitimate hit this time. Like they left themselves open because they told a story so they can get access. Because I trust Amy Rohrbach. I trust Amy Rohrbach. You can say what you want.
Why do you trust Amy Rohrbach?
Because she's a journalist with integrity. Like she's.
Why do you say that? What gives you?
Is Jake Tapper a journalist with integrity?
But he's like, if he had evidence, he presented a story and said, "I have a story with evidence." So like I listened to it, and if he said that CNN killed it so they could get access to Princess Charlotte being born.
This sounds like a whole lot of horse shit. You know what? Election here, you'll all be quiet now, or I'll mute your mics myself. This past election, there was a whisper campaign against Trudeau where they were alleging that his
whisper campaign.
Well, it started that way, where they were alleging that he left his teaching position because there was a few different allegations they were trying to prove, but they were all about some kind of sexual impropriety, either with somebody underage or somebody who was a student or someone who was a student's mother or a colleague. None of this was true. It was all just nonsense. And the newspapers wouldn't publish it because they couldn't get substantiation, because every bit of investigation they did found that, no, we're actually hearing evidence to the contrary. And so, well, rich people, famous people, there are stories quashed about them all the time, because, you know, and if you're going to go after somebody, I mean, if you're going to go after the king, kill the king. If you're going to look at Ronan Farrow and the dust up with NBC, NBC said that they didn't feel that he had presented enough corroboration of the Weinstein story for them to be able to, and their lawyers to be able to say, okay, we can publish this now. And I think it's a good thing when there's limitations, when people don't just go out there publishing rumors because it sounds good and salacious. That's what online media is, and that's why the journalism has taken a shit. Now you can talk.
I think you're denigrating like the actual reporting people, like the Miami Herald, Amy Rohrbach, and like tons of other people have done with corroboration. He's been to prison for this. It's not just, these are not just whisper campaigns like with Trudeau.
Okay, wait, who's been to prison?
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey Epstein, he's been to prison for
Okay, no one's arguing that.
So, but like this, like you're saying that this is like a whisper campaign, and people are just making innuendo. Like,
no, I'm saying that him being that Prince Andrew being in a photograph with a girl is not a straight line to him having raped her statutorily. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that a photograph with her is not proof of any crime having been committed.
Can I defend Stu here?
Yes.
For a second?
Yes, thank you.
So I think the big news was this ABC clip, and you have Amy Rohrbach, and she is clearly visibly upset because the story is now breaking about Jeffrey Epstein, the story that she'd been working on, and it's now breaking on other networks, and she had done all this work, and effectively what she's saying on this clip is that the network quashed it. The interesting part of that clip is that, yeah, she throws out Buckingham Palace. She talks about Prince Andrew, and she says Alan Dershowitz's name, and then she says something along the lines of, you know, we had everything, Clinton, we had everything. And that is unclear. So it's unclear exactly their relationships with Epstein. I think the
Ghislaine Maxwell was at Chelsea Clinton's wedding in an aisle seat.
Big deal!
I think the big news about this clip... The big news about this clip is not necessarily about those figures, but the big news about this clip is that this story has continued to be quashed and suppressed at every turn because Jeffrey Epstein was a powerful man.
Most of the time, networks, especially American news networks, are at each other's throats. They would love to be able to publish some kind of expose, some kind of scandal, some kind of gotcha on a famous person. It'll boost their ratings. They would love to do that.
Half of them have been at parties with them.
Oh, please, Stuart!
Andy Couric and Stephanopoulos have been at his house for dinner. Because they all get dirt on their faces when this story comes out about.
Do you think George Stephanopoulos kills stories? It's lawyers at these networks that kill stories. And if the story doesn't have enough substantiation, then it doesn't get published because there's journalistic
sometimes
standards.
That's not the only reason stories get quashed, though.
No, but it is the main reason that stories get quashed.
Sometimes they get quashed because they don't want to lose access to political campaigns or to, like, the royal family, who will not talk to them if they run a story like that.
Okay, can you provide me with an example of when that was proven?
She said it in the clip, I believe.
She's making that allegation.
Yeah.
So the reporter who spent months working on a story that her network didn't feel had enough substantiation behind it to protect them is now upset because somebody else got the story. I understand her being upset,
but you're just You're pulling that out of nowhere. Nowhere is it alleged she didn't have enough substantiation. She had interviews. She had, like, with Virginia Roberts. She, like, had photos. Like, this was, it's not, like, unsubstantiated. So there's no argument to say it's not unsubstantiated because it's since been substantiated by things she had.
At the time, the lawyers felt that these people either weren't credible or that they just didn't have enough that they felt comfortable going forward with a story that could potentially harm or destroy the reputations of people who didn't deserve it. Because you know nowadays that as soon as somebody's accused of something, people assume that if they're not convicted, it's just because they managed to get off somehow because they have rich, powerful friends. So, you know, I don't have a problem with that. And I understand why she's upset. Lots of reporters work on stories for a long time and then wind up getting scooped by somebody else. I understand her being upset, but that's not proof of anything other than her being upset.
So, just let's say that... like just looking at all of the other things that have happened in the Epstein universe, it seems a little far fetched to say that in this particular instance of this story being quashed, that this is the only instance in which Jeffrey Epstein's connections or who he is or was as a person is what stopped this from happening.
I have to stop you there. We don't know that. You're just saying, well, there's smoke, there must be fire. You're not saying with any substantiation. You're saying, well, it just stands to reason that a guy with his power has quashed stories before without any evidence.
What I'm saying is that when he actually was convicted of this crime, his sentence was the most ridiculous, light-hearted, unreal. If anybody else, like if any one of us was convicted of that, he was still able to work, for God's sake. Like, if that happened to any of us, that's not how our lives would go down. Let's be real there. So
you don't get all of the documents sealed until the day before you mysteriously die in a cell.
You know what? You don't need to go as far as guys are all talking conjecture, and this is not how media is supposed to work, based on conjecture and suspicion and innuendo. And
it's not based on conjecture, suspicion, and innuendo. It's based on reporting the things that are happening right in front of our
okay
eyes.
Your example of proof is a photograph that Prince Andrew has with this young girl. Do you know how many people have pictures with Prince Andrew, for fuck's sake? I mean, that's
inside
not proof
Jeffrey
of anything.
Epstein's home? Inside Jeffrey Epstein's home with Virginia.
You know what? You could probably find lots of people with pictures.
Yeah, lots of very young women, probably.
Which does not mean he had sex with them. I will not allow anybody on these podcasts to come forward and start making innuendos without actual substantial proof. Well, they were there, and this guy was guilty of having sex with underage women, and this other person was there, so he must have been having sex with underage women. No, that's the kind of shit that we need to stop online, okay? Mm-hmm. Proof is proof. The biggest concern I have is if Jeffrey Epstein was murdered in his cell, which... the whole thing about the guards being asleep, that's because that prison is notorious for having really shitty pay for guards and shitty guards. And that night, they didn't even have the regular guards. They had substitute guards. I mean, it was a disaster. The prison itself, the administration, was in itself somewhat criminal just in the way it operated. But if somebody did get to Jeffrey Epstein in what's supposed to be a secure facility and kill him, that is something that concerns me. Okay, but we don't know that happened. I thought that there was some new proof that's actually what happened. It is concerning to me if somebody managed to get in and out that way. The cameras being off have been explained. They weren't, first of all, cameras are broken in that place because the jail's falling into disrepair, and the way cameras are aimed in that jail was to provide some privacy for the prisoners so they wouldn't necessarily have caught what was going on in the cell. So that's why you don't have anything there. If this guy was actually, if somebody managed to somehow get in and kill this guy in a what is supposed to be a secure lockup for people, that's of concern to me. And that's worth investigating if there's anything, any more evidence for that. But the fact that somebody took a picture with Prince Andrew, to me, I'm sorry, I'm not willing to connect the dots and say, well, since this happened and that happened and that happened, this must be true. That's what was going on during our last election in Canada. Well, if this happened and this happened and this, this all must be true. A lot of this construction of innuendo and saying, well, come on, we all know what really happened. No, we don't, because most of us don't even know what goes on backstage in news organizations. We don't know what kind of evidence is needed, what kind of vetting process is needed for the lawyers to say, yeah, go ahead and publish. Because you know what? You don't want to get sued out of existence and everybody who works for you loses their job. So there's a responsibility in journalism to make sure that if you're going to publish something that's a really damning allegation, you have to have a rock solid base for it. And I don't have a problem with that. Does anyone else?
No, I don't.
I thought this was supposed to be Stu's victory lap. What happened?
What happened was I thought Stu had some brand new evidence that proved that Epstein was murdered. And instead he starts talking about Prince Andrew photos.
But there was that, Stu, you were saying that there was that investigator that said that, no, there's no possible way that he could have hung himself based on the autopsy, right? Like,
yeah, no, this is Dr. Baden. He was at Jeffrey Epstein's autopsy. Like, he observed the autopsy. He's a fairly high profile. If I'm going to go back to the last time we spoke, you took as evidence the coroner's report that he committed suicide, So now we have a very well-respected and pathologist saying, no, it's much more likely he was murdered. These breaks in his neck are much more consistent with homicide and strangulation.
Well, even at the time, it was said that those breaks were more consistent with homicide than suicide, but they're not unknown in suicides either. That was the problem.
Yeah, and so they decided to go with, well, sometimes it happens that way, so we're just going to decide it went that way. And he's saying, no, looking at the evidence, it's pointing to homicide, and I don't know why. Like, it's like they're saying, yeah, like every once in a while those bones may break, but it's like, okay, but the more like logical explanation for how these wounds got there is from being strangled by like another person.
And you're using the opinion of Michael Baden as the basis for this, right?
Well, it is contradictory. Like, that's he's a pathologist. He was at the autopsy, and he's saying I have contradicting evidence, and it supports his theories is supported by the evidence better than saying like he committed suicide.
Is his theory supported by other pathologists?
That's the thing, is there is a lot of suspicion about Michael Baden, the celebrity pathologist who hosts an HBO show and gets on TV shows to comment about the death of Prince and things like that. He's the, for decades, he's been the go-to freelance medical examiner for the media and lecture circuit. So I'm not saying that he can't, he's not honest. I'm not saying he's not honest. I'm not saying that his conclusions can be wiped away because of these other facts. What I'm saying is it gives me some pause as far as giving him more credibility than the other pathologist who ruled before, who doesn't have any particular celebrity to maintain.
But the evidence gives him more credibility, even admitted to by the previous pathologist who says, yeah, this is more common in strangulations, but sometimes it does happen in hangings. So like when we're looking at the evidence, the things that actually happened, they're all pointing to a certain story. And like, all I want is for this to people to continue following like where the evidence is pointing.
At this point, there is no new evidence. That's the thing. There's no new evidence at this point. And I wonder whether we're ever going to get any. Go ahead, Lauren.
So I'd like to say that I am not pointing the finger at anyone else in these allegations. I'm specifically speaking to Epstein and how his case was handled with him and for him. I'm not going to point the finger at anybody else, regardless of how curious things might look. I do understand that that can be messy, and that's not... We should not be the spoon that stirs the pot.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. But what I was saying is just that, yes, with how the case has been handled for him in particular, especially when he was alive and when he was dealing with his actual conviction and his time served in prison, that was very... inconsistent with how that case would have been handled for a regular person. And I'm not sure that I'd be willing to say that it's different for other celebrities or other people in higher statuses, because I've never really paid attention to those kinds of cases. But I do think that it is a little bit strange that when you're convicted of, you know, preying on young girls, that you can just kick around New York and go like do your job and then just sleep in jail.
Well, that's... no, there's no question that his, and when he was originally convicted, I mean, the labor secretary of the U.S. had to resign because he had been the person presiding over that agreement to let Epstein get that rap on the knuckles for what. Yeah. There's no question there was interference. In political interference, Acosta even said so in the Acosta first trial and conviction.
Off because there's intelligence.
What?
Acosta testified that the reason he was told to back off Epstein was because he, and I quote, he belongs to intelligence. So like the stuff going on with this stuff, it just that's not conjecture either. That's testimony.
Well, it is testimony. We don't know what it means. He was an asset for some branch of the intelligence community in the U.S., and they do tend to deal. They have to deal with unsavory people and make deals with unsavory people because unsavory people have information on people who are even more unsavory. That's just one of the factors. Anyway, let's move on. Enough of this. There's still no evidence that proves anything one way or another. If something else comes out, great. But Michael Biden is not enough for me to say, aha, I am now convinced that he was murdered. Is it within the realm of possibility? Yeah. And is that disturbing as a thought? Oh, yeah, that's very disturbing. But we don't know. And at this point, when you've got an injury that is more likely seen or more often seen in homicide, but is also seen in suicide, it makes it very difficult to come to an absolute conclusion. Sorry, Stuart, I thought I was gonna give you a victory lap. I didn't even read the stuff because I thought you were gonna just come and tell me that there was a smoking gun evidence that he was murdered. And so far still, there really isn't. There's just an awful lot of suspicious. There's a lot of suspicious activities, and it certainly called into question why that prison was in such horrible management and disrepair. And it makes me wonder how many other U.S. prisons are in such bad shape and have such bad staff. I mean, those are issues that should be investigated too out of this. But if you've got a smoking gun, come and tell me, I'll pat you on the back. All right. I'm not saying it's impossible that happened to him. I'm saying that right now, I've not seen enough evidence to indicate that for sure it did. So maybe there will be more investigations. It seems like there's very little more to investigate unless some kind of witness or conspirator comes forward with testimony, because all of the evidence was in that little room.
Well, that's why I mentioned Ghislaine Maxwell. Like, she is the most important beside her and John Brunel or whatever. Like, she knows everything Jeffrey Epstein knew. So, like, if there's anyone you need to find, it's her.
She's taunting the authorities by taking selfies of herself in various places around the world. She's giving them the finger. But anyway, they'll get her eventually. But who's to say she's going to say anything? But maybe she'll cut a deal. Who knows? If she gets arrested and she suspiciously commits suicide, then there will be even more reason to say, okay, now there's more going on here that's suspicious. But I do hope she does get caught, because she is equally as guilty, as far as I've read, as she didn't do the sexual assaults, but she prepared the women for the sexual assaults to happen. So she's culpable. All right. Any other topics to talk about? It was a lot more fun when we talked about the Green Party.
Yeah.
Doug Ford is back.
Yeah, and he says he's going to make a whole new tone, which basically means he's been reading the polls. He had 5 or 6 weeks to sit in whatever holding chamber the federal conservatives had him in to read the polls and have people talk to him and say, you know, you might want to get reelected, and this might be a way to do it. But that guy can't help himself. Doug Ford is Doug Ford, and there is no way that he's going to stop being Doug Ford. And Doug Ford's biggest liability is being Doug Ford. So as much as he says he wants a new tone, let's see how long this lasts. Remember when early on in Trump's presidency, he would actually give a speech that as it was written off the teleprompter, and liberal commentators like Van Jones on CNN would say, tonight was the night Donald Trump became president. And then the next day, Donald Trump was tweeting mad shit all over the internet. It's because people, they wanted to believe that he was going to put a new tone. He even himself might have thought, okay, fine. I see what you're saying. I'm going to approach this differently. But, you can't stop somebody from being who they are. And that's why I don't think this new tone is going to stay. Does anybody believe this new tone that Doug Ford's talking about in Queen's Park is going to be something that actually persists?
It's actually already gone.
So when did he say that?
What was that, Lauren?
I said, when did he actually say that?
When he came back a week ago.
Okay. Because I got an email from from the party, Doug Ford, on November 4th at 9:24 in the morning, explaining why he's so upset that the country is super divided, and then just started talking about Alberta and Saskatchewan.
In Queen's Park, I think it was today or yesterday, he accused the NDP of having destroyed Hamilton, specifically Andrea Horvath.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ridiculous, because Andrea Horvath is not effective enough to have destroyed any large or small municipality. Mo, aren't you glad that you're out in Vancouver and you don't have to deal with either Doug Ford or Jason Kenney?
I have no idea what you're talking about when it comes to the sports stuff. I just heard that you guys got a dollar beer or something. It's the cheapest beer in Canada. You live in, does that happen?
You live in beautiful, blissful ignorance. Vancouver has its own problems, but you don't have a Ford or a Jason Kenney. The buck a beer thing didn't wind up panning out. Because you know what kind of beer you can get for a buck? Also, the manufacturers of the beer couldn't actually sell the beer for a buck because it costs more than that to make the damn thing. Listen to Mo. See, listen to the joy in Mo's laughter. Listen to listen to the spirit, the happiness. This is what happens when you live in a province that is not governed by Doug Ford or Jason Kenney. And yeah, you can still muster
up. Sitting pretty in Vancouver right here.
That's right. You know, this is a good example. And I hope one day we, all of us in all the provinces, are able to laugh like Mo Amir. Mo Amir, of course, is the founder, host, producer of This Is Van Color, the podcast. You can find it wherever podcasts are found. A couple of his episodes, one of them already went up as a special on FU Politics. Two more are going to be going up this week as special editions. And I thank you, Mo, for alerting us when there is episodes of your podcast that you think that our audience would also be interested in that are not specific to Vancouver, but have a general theme. So I thank you for that. Keep doing good work. All right.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And anytime I have a guest that I want to share with you guys, I guarantee it's going to be amazing. It's not about me. It's about the guest. And they have some great informative conversations.
Well, it takes a good host to get stuff out of a guest. Otherwise, they can sit like a block of cement. Lauren Griffith, thank you for joining us. Especially, I mean, I know that you are mixed race. I hope you weren't terribly offended by the Octoroon comments.
You know what? That's the first time I've ever heard that. And for half a second there, I was like, hey, wait a second. I think I'm an eighth black.
So you're who he was talking about. Richard Spencer hates you. Because you're an octoroon.
That's okay. The feeling is mutual. So,
no, it would be weird if like you were like the racist, but only specifically for octoroons. Like any other variation, you're fine with.
That like how?
A very specific racist for a very.
That's right. Fact. I don't have a problem with black people. I don't have a problem with intermarriage. I do have a problem with octoroon.
Oh yeah. Man.
Yeah, I only have a problem with octoroons. Anybody else is fine.
Everybody.
Yeah, if you're a quarter black, no problem. But an eighth black, like that would be a very small racist movement. People who are only racist against octoroons. Very ridiculous. Dave Kay, as always, you provide a very reasoned voice with a lot of information backing it up. So thank you for joining us, and I hope that we'll have you back here again real soon.
Thank you.
All right. And Stuart Benson. Stuart, you know as much as I yell at you, that's only affection.
I love it. I love it.
You that's know, like, you know, Stuart, that I think of you like a little brother almost.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. That's so sweet. That's why I beat on you.
Yeah.
All right.
It feels so good when you finally agree with something I said.
Listen, I think at least once you've changed my mind on a subject. And in the course of my life, you can find maybe five marks on the calendar of my entire life where that's happened. So take a victory lap on that itself.
Yeah, I get one at least.
All right. And thank you for being a good sport and for taking it and for engaging in a good, vigorous debate. Because at the end of it, we were yelling at each other and shit. But I like you. I like you. I think you like me. We're just arguing. Oh, yeah. But at the end, we're still friends. And I hope all of you out there are still friends. I hope we've not offended any octoroons who are in the audience. I wonder what...
Too late now.
What if you're 1/16th black? What is the term for that? I mean, octo is eight, right? In Latin or Greek. What's...
I think we're getting into dangerous territory here.
Yeah, this is... Okay, let's not go there. But if you've enjoyed this program, support us, patreon.com/FU Network TV. Give us a boost, a one-time boost if you want, at PayPal, FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. I guess that's it. I still have to think of a good tagline to close this show with. I'm open to suggestions. As long as they don't involve Jeffrey Epstein or Prince Andrew, I'm open to suggestions. All right. Thank you all, my panelists. Thank you all, audience, here on Rock'em Sock'em Politics, on FU Politics, on Fun, the FU Network. Wow, that's a hell of a mouthful. We'll talk to you again next show, next week. This is Fun, the FU Network.